أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وصلى الله على محمد وعلى آله الطاهرين. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah and welcome to another session in our course from Ali alayhi salam to Al-Mahdi alayhi salam. This is the 22nd session of our course we're nearly at the end of the course, and inshallah today we want to finish off the discussion we started in the last two sessions, where we talked about how the Imams were active and always in action, trying to bring guidance in the society, guide people, do tarbiyah of the people, and gradually and slowly try to move the society towards a state where they can establish a government of justice and peace and fulfill everybody's rights. And we hope that Imam Mahdi comes soon, inshallah, and that we can finally establish such a system. But we discussed in the last session that the Imams in their time were active and working towards this goal. And we came to discussing all the Imams, and including Imam Hassan Askari and his companions, and the system of wakala that was very strong at his time as well. So now we want to move on to Ghaybat al-Sughra and what comes after that, inshallah. So for the discussion we have with us Sheikh Miqdad. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikhna.
Alaikum salam.
Thank you very much again for coming. Let's continue from where we left and come into Ghaybat al-Sughra, and inshallah onwards to Ghaybat al-Kubra.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi at-tahirin. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjal farajhum. Right. So great to be back to carry on this discussion. Inshallah, as you mentioned, we'll start this discussion by looking at Ghaybat al-Sughra. The main thing that I want to discuss over here is the four nawab that we have. So over here, the term we use is the na'ib, the nawab, which is the plural of na'ib. So most people know, obviously, that there's four individuals that are the exclusive wakil of the imam. There's a plenty of things to say about the Ghaybat al-Sughra, a lot of amazing stories, a lot of different things that happen. I'm going to go through this very quickly, just share a few important parts about this. You see, what happens is that when the 11th Imam becomes Shaheed, you've discussed in the previous sessions as well, the situation is extremely tense, right? Because everybody knows, right, that the Ghaybah is coming. Everybody knows that the 12th is the last. Everybody knows that he's going to be one who's going to remove Dhulm from wherever it's happening. So everybody's on his case.
Need to remember the fact that these hadiths were there among the Ahlul Sunnah as well.
Exactly.
Among the Shias, it was famous. And even those who didn't believe in it do know the fact that the Shias believe in it. And so the Shias, if they find this person, would rally around that person because of their belief, and that could cause a lot of problems for the government.
Yeah.
So it's a very sensitive matter.
Yeah. And so you find that this whole system that we've been talking about for the past two sessions was set up for exactly these kind of moments. In fact, if you remember, we talked about this before as well, that in the first session, we talked about one of the roles and the reasons, right? The first section of the first discussion. One of the reasons why this system was in place was for what? Was for preparing people for Ghaybah. So in such tense moments, in such confusion, right? The system has to deliver what it was supposed to deliver, right? And this is exactly what it does. And you find that people rally themselves around who? Around a person by the name of Uthman ibn Sa'id, right? Abu Muhammad, Uthman ibn Sa'id, we've talked about it so many times, yeah. Right?
He was the wakil of the Imam Hassan Askari. Right?
And before that, the wakil of Imam Hadi alayhi salam as well. And so much praise he receives from both Imam Hadi, Imam Hassan Askari. At one point, he's the bab for Imam Hassan Askari. He's the main guy through everything happens, right? This guy is known amongst the people. So obviously, the Shias now have got used to in the system. Whenever there's an issue, whenever we need to find our solution, we go to the wakil of our time. And we see the wakil over here is Uthman. And everybody just gathers around Uthman. And Uthman takes over the situation. And what happens is that he now becomes the very naturally, kind of a natural progress where he becomes the wakil. What changes, however, which is different from other situations, is that in this case, he becomes the exclusive bab. It means that nobody can now come to the imam. Now, this is not something new, Right. It
had happened previously as well. You said this happened in time of Qadim, for example.
Right. Because many times the imams themselves were not available to people, and they had people had to go through the wakala, right? But in this case, it's exclusive. It's known. The term ghaiba, it's called, right? Mm-hmm. People know that now we don't have access to the imam, right? And if we want anything in terms of our teaching, our guidance, our paying homes, etc., we have to go through the wakala, and specifically through Uthman ibn Sa'id. Now, what's important about this wakala is we need to establish as well that there were the wakils of the time and how it passed on to all the four and how this ends at the fourth one. So come back a few steps back. So Ahmad ibn Ishaq, we talk about Ahmad ibn Ishaq. He goes to the 10th imam. The 10th imam tells him, Hada Abu Amr, right? Thiqatul Amin tells him, this is, go through him basically if you want to learn about your deen. Same story about the same individual. He comes to Ahmad ibn Ishaq, comes to Imam Hassan Askari, right? Same reply from Imam Hassan Askari, Hada Abu Amr, Thiqatul Amin. Imam Hassan Askari put something very important over here. Thiqatul Madi, wa thiqati fil mahya wa mamati, fama qalahu lakum fa'anni yaqulu wa ma adda ilaykum fa'anni yu'addi. We talk about these things, but it's showing that this person, this Uthman, is going to be thicker till the end, right? So everybody gathers around him, and there is no kind of division over here. This is very important, right? There's no other individuals that come up and claim, oh, but I'm supposed to be the representative, I'm supposed to be the name of the imam. No, the ijma' of all the scholars, of all the wakala in the whole, and remember it's a pyramid, right? Mm-hmm. In the whole system, basically, everybody looks up to Uthman. He's a recognized bab for the 12th imam.
I guess that would be a result of the system having grown and established itself.
Exactly.
And Imam Hassan Askari having passed on the message that this is what's happening. Obviously, the birth of the imam specifically wasn't announced in that sense, right? Or was it announced?
So there are numerous stories, enough evidence, right, to show that when the imam was born, right, in the first 5 years, obviously his birth was hidden, right? His birth was hidden. They were in the Sardab, right? Which is an amazing place to go visit today as well. We still preserved. However,
that's the underground
room, exactly, in Samarra. Sort of thing, in, yes, Samarra. Which actually, before a couple of years, when we used to go back in the days, it used to be one or two room only. And then a couple of years ago, when the Samarra was bombed and they reconstructed everything, they actually discovered a more deeper part of the Sardab. So I still remember when I went a few years ago, I had gone a decade ago. And so this time when I went, I was like, I'm sure the Sardab looks a bit bigger. What happened, basically? And I asked around, I found out that actually what happened was that they discovered a bigger part of it as well. It goes to show how secretive this was, right? The Sardab. Anyway, during the first 5 years of the imam's life, the Imam Hassan Askari shows his child, the 12th imam, to many of the companions. They see the imam, right? They witness the imam. They bear shahada that this is the 12th imam. So there is no doubt about the imam having been born. Mm-hmm. People have seen him, right? Two witnesses is enough, right? Two of the biggest companions, they see this enough. But we have more than that. Like, the stories are plenty, inshallah, for another day. I'll just mention one over here. So this is in Ghiba of Tusi, where a big number of companions narrate this narration, which it says Khabarun Tawil Mashur as well. It's a very famous hadith as well. Qalu jami'an ijtama'na ila Abi Muhammad. A group of us, right, many of us got together at the house of Imam Hassan Askari. Nas'aluhu anil hujja min ba'dihi. And we asked him about the hujja after him. And he goes to the Arba'una Rajula. We were 40 people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Uthman ibn Sa'id is present there, right? Cut a long story short, the imam shows them this child, right? فَقَالَ هَذَا إِمَامُكُمْ مِنْ بَعْدِ وَخَلِيفَتِي عَلَيْكُمْ أَتِئُهُ وَلَا تَتَفَرَّقُ مِنْ بَعْدِ فَتَحْلِكُ فِي أَدْيَانِكُمْ. Right? So the imam shows them his child, the 12th holy imam. Then the imam tells them, وَإِنَّكُمْ لَا تَرَوْنَهُ مِنْ بَعْدِ يَوْمِكُمْ. You will not see him after today. Right? هَذَا حَتَّى يَتِمُّ لَهُ عُمْرٌ. Until his life prolonged. فَاقْبَلُوا مِنْ عُثْمَانَ مَا يَقُولُهُ. وانتهوا إلى أمره واقبلوا قوله فهو خليفة إمامكم والأمر إليه في حد. And the Khalid carries on. At this gathering, Imam Hassan Azkari points to Uthman and says, when this child, the 12th Imam, goes into Ghaiba, you will not see him after this, okay? Your affair lies with who? With Uthman ibn Sa'id. This is very important. This is the appointment of Uthman as the wakil and the only wakil in whose affairs lies the entire system during the Ghaiba, the Ghaiba al-Sughra.
So the other thing is about the Ghaiba, it's a bit different to the Imam just being in prison. It's like announced that this is now something different. This is not that natural sort of barrier. No, this is actually a new stage in this whole process, basically.
Yeah. And the people have been prepared, right? That this is the place where now you will not be able to recognize the Imam. You cannot have direct link with the Imam, etc. Another thing about Uthman is that the fact that he's appointed is that he and actually his son as well. So the hadith talks about both of them because his son is going to be the second naib. They both have access to the Imam. And how we see this is because one, they can see him. And we'll talk about this as well. And two, more commonly, is that they produce letters from the Imam. And remember, people know the handwriting of the 12th Imam, right? So, وَكَانَ التَّوْقِعَاتُ صَاحِبِ الْأَمْرِ تَخْرُجُ عَلَىٰ يَدَيْ أُثْمَانِ بْنِ السَّعِيدِ وَأَبْنِهِ أَبِي جَعْفَرْ مُحَمَّدِ بْنِ أُثْمَانِ. Right, so tawqi'at with the handwriting of the 12th Imam comes from both Uthman and the naib after him. Right, ila shi'atihi wa khawasi abihi abi Muhammad bil amri wal nahi wal ajwabati amma yas'aluhu shi'a. Right, with the amr from the Imam, with the answer to the questions that she has. Right, the tawqi'at comes from the hands of these two individuals, Uthman and his son. And the hadith, this is in Ghaiba Tusi, where Sheikh Tusi mentions, فَلَمْ تَزِلَ الشِّيَعَةُ مُقِيمَةً عَلَىٰ عَدَالَتِهِمَا إِلَىٰ أَن تُوَفِّي عُثْمَانِ, etc. The Shias are all acknowledge and all agree basically that these two individuals were very amazing individuals. Interesting about Uthman is that one of the things that's very, very crucial about this stage as well is that things are progressing very fast and becoming very, very dangerous. Although the system is working very beautifully, right? Very strongly as well. The numbers of wukala have increased, pretty much doubled, right? But it's a very high stage of taqiyah, right? So for example, regarding Uthman, we find that, again, Sheikh Tusi mentions that when money used to come or money used to be need to be transferred, حَمْلُهُ مِنَ الْأَمْوَالِ أَنْفَذُوا إِلَىٰ أَبِي عَمْرٍ فَيَجْعَلُهُ فِي جِرَابِ السَّمْنِ وَزِقَاقِهِ وَيَحْمِلُهُ إِلَىٰ أَبِي مُحَمَّدٍ تَقِيَّةً وَخَوْفًا. Right? Remember we said he was an oil seller, right? So he would put them into the oil containers or kind of hide it in his work so that he can take the wujuhat, can take the funds back to the imam. And we'll see about the later naibs as well, how much taqiyah is crucial over here, right? That these nawab themselves are also very much kind of less accessible. Uthman dies very quickly, right? Some reports say 7 years, some reports say even less. Yeah, so he's the naib for the 12th Imam for a few years only. At the age of 65, sorry, in the year 265, he passes away. This is his shrine in Baghdad. So he's buried in Baghdad. Unfortunately, some very evil individuals put fire to the haram of Uthman in December 2019. So this was in the news as well. I'm not sure of what happened after that. Have they rebuilt it or not? I'm not sure. But this is the picture at the top left is a picture of the haram before it was burnt. His son, Muhammad ibn Uthman ibn Sa'id, then takes over the role of being the exclusive wakil and the naib of the 12th Lord Imam. He is a recognized individual. He is actually a scholar from the time recognized from the time of the 11th Imam. So for example, we have Abu Ali annahu sa'ala Abu Muhammad. So he asks the 11th Imam. This is in Al-Kafi. فَقَالَ لَهُ. So he asks him basically, where should I go? Who should I refer back to? Says the Imam tells him Al-Amri, referring to Uthman ibn Sa'id, وَابْنُهُ ثِقَتَان. So the 11th Imam over here mentions Uthman and he says his son as well. Both of them are thiqa, right? Whatever comes from them comes from me, except the same thing. So you find that he's a recognized scholar even in the time of the 11th Imam. Again, about him, as you saw previously as well, he has this tawqi'at, that things come through him, right? The letters of the 12th Imam come through him. At the time of Muhammad ibn Uthman, the second Naib, there is one wakil of the Imam who actually turns against him, right? So this happens during the time of the second Naib. His name is Ahmad ibn Hilal. Ahmad ibn Hilal is a Naib and a wakil for the 11th Imam, recognized scholar, right? A big companion of, in fact, we have many narrations through him as well. So he's, a lot of reporters of hadith report back to him as well, from him. So the big, big recognized person.
So what happens that he decides all of a sudden to turn his back?
So he's got some, perhaps jealousy, why wasn't he chosen? Perhaps other motives, but whatever the case, he rejects the niyaba of Muhammad ibn Uthman. So this is how Tusi reports it in Al-Ghayba. He says that the Shia did ijma on the fact that Muhammad ibn Uthman is the wakil of the 12th Imam. Right? Everybody agreed with that. So they came to him, and they came to Hilal, Ahmad ibn Hilal, أَلَا تَقْبَلُوا أَمْرَ أَبِي جَعْفَرْ مُحَمَّدِ بْنِ أُثْمَانِ وَتَرْجِعُ إِلَيْهِ وَقَدْ نَسَّ عَلَيْهِ الْإِمَامَ الْمُفْتَرَضُ الطَّاعَةِ. Right, it's clear from the Imam that Muhammad ibn Uthman is the wakil. Why are you going against him? Right. So he says, فَقَالَ لَهُمْ لَمْ أَسْمَعْهُ يَنُسُّ عَلَيْهِ بِالْوَكَالَةِ. Like, I haven't heard this. Like, over here, all the shias got together in unity, they're saying, this is from the Imam, so I haven't heard this. فَقَالَ أَنْتُمْ وَمَا سَمِعْتُمْ وَوَقَفَ عَلَى أَبِي جَعْفَرْ فَلَعَنَهُ وَتَبَرَّأُ مِنْ. Right, the Imam goes on. So this person does waqf on Uthman, so he stops over here. Doesn't count Muhammad ibn Uthman as a naib after him. And actually the Imam then curses him. Right? The curse of the Imam is very interesting because he's a respectable scholar. The Imam writes a tawqi where he distances himself from him, says this guy is not a reliable person. People actually doubt this tawqi. Right? The Imam writes a second letter. Warada ala al-Qasim ibn Ala, he's a wakil of the 12th Imam. Nuskhatun ma kharaja min la'an ibn Hilal. Wa kana ibtada'u dhalik an kataba alayhi salam ila qawwamihi bil Iraq. That Imam writes to his qawwam. What's a qawwam? Wakala, right? The other word for wakala. In Iraq, ihdharu as-sufiy al-mutasanni'. Right? Stay away from this Sufi, right? Who is mutasanni'? Mutasanni' means like he portrays himself as a Sunni. As a Sufi, right? He portrays himself as a pious individual, but actually this is not true. Inside him, he is full of love for this world, etc. In fact, so this is the second letter that comes from the Imam. Even with this, people are still like not sure, right? This time a third letter, very serious, comes from the Imam, a very long letter, a third time cursing him properly. He says, well, I'm cursing this guy, right? This is not a naib, and distance yourself from him, right? So you find that this time, this is how another way where the system was shaken, but the Imam dealt with it, the wakala dealt with it, and it was moved on, and it carried on. So this was from Rijal Kashi. Interesting about Muhammad al-Uthman is his period is the longest period of being a wakil for the 12th or Imam. He actually meets the Imam. So for example, Sheikh Saduq in Sahih reports that Sa'altu Muhammad Ja'far al-Himyari asks Muhammad, this naib, Ra'ayta sahiba hadha al-amr? Have you seen the 12th Imam? فَقَالَ النَّعَمْ I've seen him. Right? وَآخِرُ أَحْدِ بِهِ عِنْدَ بَيْتِ الْحَرَامِ The last time I saw him was in Mecca, in the Bayt al-Haram. وَهُوَ يَقُولَ اللَّهُمَّ أَنْجِزْ لِي مَا وَعَدْتَنِي. This is Sheikh Saduq. Interestingly, he says that, Wallah, in another report, right? He says, Wallah, inna sahiba hadha al-am la yahduru al-mawsima kulla sana. The 12th Imam comes to Hajj every year.
Yeah.
And this is quite famous for those who've been to Hajj. Remember, you've been told, and this is from the Muhammad ibn Uthman, who says that, yes, and he swears that, Wallah, I swear that the 12th Imam is there in Hajj every year. Remember we said previously as well, Hajj is where people get together, this is where the meetings happen, etc. And then he describes what the ghaiba means. يَرَى النَّاسِ وَيَعْرِفُهُمْ وَيَرَوْنَهُ وَلَا يَعْرِفُونَهُ The Imam sees the people, recognizes the people,
right? But they don't see him, they don't recognize him. And this is what really the definition of ghaiba means, is, yeah. Basically.
It doesn't mean he's like completely outside this world. No. It
means that he comes, he's present in Hajj, right? You probably might have crossed past him, right? Looked at him, not recognized that he's the imam. But he recognized you and he saw you. This was from Sheikh Sadur. The imam predicts his death, tells Muhammad ibn Uthman that this is the time when you're going to die, a couple of months before. Very interestingly, Muhammad ibn Uthman then prepares himself for death. One of the companions says, فَوَجَدْتُهُ وَبَيْنَ يَدَيْهِ سَاجَةٌ. Muhammad ibn Uthman prepares like a wooden kind of plate whereby he writes some verse of the Quran as well as the name of the 12 imams, right? يَكْتُبُ آيَا مِنَ الْقُرْآنِ وَأَسْمَعَ الْأَئِمَّةِ, right? Ala hawashiha. And then the person asks him, like, why do you do this? And obviously he says, like, this is going to help me in the grave when I'm questioned about this, because this is my faith. So it's really something we do sometimes as well in the different ceremonies that we have during death. So he's wakil for around 38 or so years and dies in the year 305. He's buried in West Baghdad. So all the four nawabs are buried in Baghdad. This is his shrine and the haram where he's buried in West Baghdad. The naib after him is Hussein ibn Ruh Nobakhti. Now, when Hussein ibn Ruh Nobakhti comes, now this period of time, there are many recognized scholars, right, at that time, who could all have been possibly the naib of the imam. And two of them is Abu Sahl Nobakhti, a very important scholar of the time, and Ja'far ibn Muhammad ibn Matil. Right? These two are people that you could say that could have been also the naib, but nobody goes against Hussein ibn Ruh, right? It's clear that the imam, the 12th imam, appoints Hussein ibn Ruh as the third naib, right, after Muhammad ibn Uthman. And these two scholars, very pious, recognize this and attest to this, and I'll share the hadith. There's one person by the name of Shalmaghani, who, again, is one of the individuals that goes against Hussein ibn Ruh, but I don't want to go into that story for now. We find that a group of companions, amongst them these names I mentioned right now, come to the presence of Abi Ja'far. Right? Who's Abi Ja'far? He's a second naib, Muhammad ibn Uthman. Abi Ja'far, radiallahu anhu, فَقَالُوا لَهُ إِنْ حَدَثَ أَمْرٌ فَمَنْ يَكُونُ مَكَانَكَ. If you die, who is going to take over your place? فَقَالَ لَهُمْ هَذَا أَبُو الْقَاسِمِ الْحُسَيْنِ بْنُ الرُّوحِ. Right? So Muhammad ibn Uthman says that the niyaba goes from me, goes to Hussein ibn Ruh. Very interesting over here, right? Something we notice over here. Remember we said at the beginning that the imam appoints, right? And in the wukala, from the beginning, the imam would appoint, like, you're the wakil, right? From here, kind of, we know it's coming from the imam, right? But kind of the direct link goes away, right? It's this wakil now says that the next wakil is going to
be. But the appointment is from the imam.
Definitely, right? The appointment is from the imam. Because we know they don't say anything except that which the imam has said. The imam has specified this. So he says, Al-Qa'imu Maqami, this is the person who's going to take my maqam. Wasafiru baynakum wa bayna sahib al-am. He's the safir. Look at the word that's used over here. Safir is used over here. Between you and sahib al-amr. Wal wakil wa thiqatu al-amin. فَارَجِعُوا إِلَيْهِ فِي أُمُورِكُمْ وَعَوِّلُوا عَلَيْهِ فِي مُهِمَّاتِكُمْ فَبِذَلِكَ أُمِرْتُ وَقَدْ بَلَّغْتُ. This is something that I've been instructed with. So this is saying that this is from the imam. وَقَدْ بَلَّغْتُ. These two individuals that could have been the wakil but are not, look at how they deal with this situation. فَلَمَّا كَانَ عِنْدَ ذَلِكَ. This is talking about Matil, right? This is talking about Ja'far ibn Ahmad ibn Matil. فَلَمَّا كَانَ عِنْدَ ذَلِكَ وَقَعَ الْإِخْتِيَارِ عَلَى أَبِي الْقَاسِمِ. When the whole power of Niyaba comes to Hussein ibn Ruh, سَلَّمُوا وَلَمْ يُنْكِرُوا. They submit to him and they don't deny him. وَكَانُوا مَعَهُ وَبَيْنَ يَدَيْهِ كَمَا كَانَ مَعَ أَبِي جَعْفَرِ. They deal exactly with him the way they deal with Muhammad ibn Uthman, right? وَلَمْ يَزَلْ جَعْفَرِ ibn Ahmad ibn Matil, right? فِي جُمْلَةِ أَبِي الْقَاسِمِ رَضِيَ اللَّهُ عَنْهُ وَبَيْنَ يَدَيْهِ كَتَصَرُّفِ بَيْنَ يَدَيْ أَبِي جَعْفَرِ الْعَمْرِ. This individual, Ahmad ibn Matil, is also the same as well. He doesn't go against Hussein ibn Ruh. Shows how great this scholar was in his position. Same with Abu Sahl ibn Nobakhti. We mentioned this hadith before. People come to Sahl ibn Nobakhti. It says, So ila faqila kayfa sara hadar am ila shaykh Abil Qasim al Hussein ibn Ruh dunaka. How did this niyab, being a naib of the imam,
to him rather than you?
Exactly. How did that happen? فَقَالَ هُمْ أَعْلَمُ. The imams know better, right? وَمَخْتَارُهُ وَلَكِنْ أَنَا رَجُلٌ أَلْقَ الْخُصُومَ وَأُنَاذِرُهُمْ. I'm a person who I'm involved in dialogue and doing munadhara with other individual, other sects, right? And there's no way to place that important responsibility of being a wakil. لَعَلِي كُنْتُ أَدُلُّ عَلَى مَكَانِهِ وَأَبُ الْقَاسِمِ فَلَوْ كَانَتِ الْحُجَّةَ تَحْتَ ذَيْلِهِ وَقُرِّضُ بِالْمَقَارِضِ مَا كَشَفَ الذَّيْلُ عَنْهُ أَوْ كَمَا قَالَ. He says, kind of a way of saying basically that if something when it's given to Hussein ibn Ruh, he will not reveal it, even though it's cut into pieces by scissors. Right? The trait that he brings out regarding Hussein ibn Ruh is this, that he's a person who is able to hold secrets.
Mm.
And obviously being a naib, you have to hold secrets. Okay. So he says that if...
And he's not the type of person who would betray, even with out of fear, he's exactly. still going to stay strong.
Basically, he's a manager. Something as well is very important. The wakala have to be good managers as well, right? They have to have that sharh sad to be able to manage, because they're managing a huge organization, right? And so ilm is not just sufficient. You have to have other skills of bravery, courage, management skills, etc. So he says this person is able to hold this secret. Another reason why perhaps Hussein ibn Ruh has chosen is because of how close he was to Muhammad ibn Uthman. And that's kind of normal when you have an organization, right? So for example, if you look at this hadith, كان أبو القاسم Hussein ibn Ruh, he was the wakil لأبي جعفر, Muhammad ibn Uthman. ينظر له في أملاكه ويلقي بأسراره الرؤساء من شياته. He was in charge of a lot of the different things and knew a lot of different things from that time. So kind of natural flow, if you want the system to work nicely, move on to the next wakil, give it to somebody like who's very close.
Him being close to him also, he gets that experience. He's exposed to how the system works better. So he's basically more ready than others.
Exactly. Another thing about this Hussein ibn Ruh is that, very interestingly, he's counted as a mufti by the Sunni scholars. And in fact, look at this. Sheikh Tusi says, كانت العامة أيضا تعظمه. The Ahl al-Sunnah will actually respect him as a scholar. Right?
So, and he wasn't some random person. He was still somebody who is established. Obviously, there are other people who might have looked more suitable, but Imam chose him.
That's one. And two, it's the taqiyah that was very important as well. Mm. He was in full taqiyah. He would not reveal himself as a naib of the Imam. Right? كان أبو القاسم يحضر التقية وخوفا. He would act with precaution and taqiyah. Right? So much so that the Ahl al-Sunnah, when somebody would call him a Rafidi, they would actually go against that. They would get really angry. The Ahl al-Sunnah would get really angry if somebody would say that Hussein ibn Ruh is a Rafidi.
That's how much he hid his faith, that exactly. People wouldn't really know he's like that.
And this reveals to us the situation, how intense the situation is, right? That he is the wakil, the naib of the imam, right? The only door to the imam, but he himself is actually so much in taqiyah that actually nobody knows he's a Shia, right? Forget being the naib of the imam. In fact, Hussein ibn Ruh even spends 5 years in prison, right? There's a whole event that happens with the Abbasi Khalifa of the time, and because of that, he's caught and put into prison. There's a money issue that happens, related to taxes, and because of that, he spends 5 years in prison. Anyhow, his wakala time is around 21 or so years, and he again is buried in Baghdad. This is his West Baghdad. This is his shrine and his grave. And we come to the last wakil, which is Ali ibn Muhammad al-Samuri. We don't know much about him. Like, now you've seen how from the first naib to the third one, how tense things were, how fearful, how much we had to fear the situation, and how much taqiyah was involved over here. Despite that, everything was working fine, right? The situation reaches to Ali ibn Muhammad al-Samuri, okay? He takes the role of being a naib of the imam after being appointed and passed on from Hussein ibn Ruh. So you have this hadith from Sheikh Tusi in Al-Ghaiba. Awsa Sheikh Abu al-Qasim radiyallahu anhu ila Abi al-Hasan Ali ibn Muhammad al-Samuri radiyallahu anhu faqama bima kana ila Abi al-Qasim. Right? So the wasiyah is gone to this person, that he now takes up the position of being the wakil of the imam. We don't have too much discussion or information about what happens. He's there for a very short period of time. His wakala doesn't last very long, around 2 to 3 years his wakala. And a point comes where he receives the final tawqi of the 12th imam to an official na'ib, which is what you find on your screen over here. And this is how the letter starts. So tawqi an nuskhatuhu, bismillahir rahmanir rahim, ya Ali ibn Muhammad al-Samuri, a'adhamallahu ajra ikhwanika fika, fa innaka mayyitun ma baynaka wa bayna sittati ayyam. You will die in 6 days. Right? Fajma amrak, gather your affairs, right? Get ready, right? Close up everything. وَلَا تُوسِي إِلَىٰ أَحَدٍ يَقُومُ مَقَامَكَ. And here's an instruction for you. Do not appoint anyone after you. Up until now, every single wakil that was dying appointed the next one on the instruction of the 12th imam. Right? Over here, the tawqi says to him, لَا تُوسِي إِلَىٰ أَحَدٍ يَقُومُ مَقَامَكَ بَعْدَ وَفَاتِكَ. After you die, nobody's going to take your position. فَقَدْ وَقَعَتِ الْغَيْبَةُ الثَّانِيَةِ. Because the second ghiba is going to start. And this is how the specific and exclusive position of being a naib of the imam comes to an end with the al-Samuri, with the instruction of the imam that do not appoint anyone after him. So this is how the story ends.
And how the ghaiba starts.
Now, this is where I want to make a very important statement, right? And this is this. That do we really think, I'm asking this question this way, do we really think that the Ahlul Bayt set up this system of wakala and did everything they did, all the blood that was spilled, right, all the efforts that was put into setting up this system from the time of Imam Sajjad, Imam Baqir, then officially Imam Sadiq, all the different things that they dealt, the growth of this system became so powerful, right? Do you think that when it comes to this position, right, year 256 or so, right, it's a dead end? That's it? All done? We close the chapter, break and dismantle the entire system of wakala, right, and tell the Shias, guys, get on with your lives.
It's, Imam's not coming back anytime soon, just, you know, sort yourself out.
Sort yourselves out. I don't know. Like, no, like, it's absurd if anyone were to think and look at what we just talked about and then say that, okay, that's it, dead end, right? You would say that is just complete, like, to use a better word, foolishness or really ignorant, right? To say that this is a dead end. It cannot end like this. It doesn't make sense for it to end like this, right? Because it's like saying, okay, so when the 11th imam was there, and the Hibat al-Sughra, then everybody was dealing with the situation with the imam through the wakala system, etc. And then now we say, okay, fine, we wait till the ghaiba finishes and the dhuhr happens, right? And that's when we're going to talk about the imam again and the system of wakala again and everything that's going to happen. And what about in between? Like, what about us in between? Like, that's it? Nothing happens then? Mm-hmm. Like, the history suddenly kind of has a massive gap.
Yeah. So the one is the in the sense of our guidance, the people in between need to be guided. But also, like we said with Sheikh Qadim in the session a few days back, the zuhur will never happen if the situation of the people is the same as the situation when it was when he went into ghaiba.
Yeah.
He went into ghaiba because of certain reasons.
Yeah.
If those reasons stay, and the reasons go back to the people in the society, if those stay and don't change, then the imam's never going to come back. So there has to be something, some continuation, something that happens for the guidance of the people that leads to the society eventually improving and the imam being able to come.
Yeah. So you see, the system was laid by Imam Sajjad or Imam Baqir, right? And then official with Imam Qadim. You look at the numbers of wakala, right? They're growing slowly. The system is setting up. What happens, and what's very important, coming back to a point I mentioned in passing that I want to talk about in the second session, is this, that this system was in place for it to carry on, not to die. It wasn't a system saying, okay, at the ghaibat, everything's finished, lock the doors, I'll see you after a couple of millenniums. That's not the case. On the contrary, the system was in place one of the major reasons why the assistance was placed was to prepare the people for the ghaibah. So that when the ghaibah happens, you know what to do. I've set up a system so that you work on this system.
In fact, what the system shows is that if the imam is there or not, there is a need for a system to
exactly.
for the people's
guidance.
Because
the imam has to be there. He has roles to perform. He has to teach us. He has to protect the religion. He has to do tarbiyah. He has to collect the khums. He has to be a
hujjah. So when the imam is there for him to perform these actions and these duties, he needs a system. So when he's not there, then it's even more important for that system for such
work.
A system to be there.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So what we're going to talk about right now is you go back to what everything that we said, right? Everything we talked about in the last two sessions, and realize that actually what the imams were doing was preparing us, right, doing the ghaibah, for such a system to even become even stronger. And this is a system that carries on. Yes, you don't call it the system of the network of wakala anymore.
Because now the difference is that imam doesn't appoint anyone anymore.
Right. So because I mentioned over here, and one of the biggest difference between this is, let me talk about the similarity. The system is the same. So nothing's changed. The only thing that's changed, or one of the very few things that has changed, is that now the appointment of the wakil of the imam is not a specific appointment. From the time of Imam Sajjad all the way to the Ghaibat al-Sughra, till the end of Ghaibat al-Sughra, the imam would appoint and say, X person, Fulan ibn Fulan, you are the wakil. Right?
Now the imam is not there to do that.
Now the imam is not going to do that anymore. Instead, he's given us criteria.
Yeah. And in fact, one is that imam has given us criteria in a hadith, but the other way we can see is that if we observe what kind of people imam has been appointed throughout the system, we can sort of get an understanding
of what
kind of people.
He's handing over the system. Here's the system, okay? Carry it on.
Yeah. You've understood now how it's supposed to work. You've understood what kind of people need to deal with it. You've understood what kind of challenges it can have.
Exactly.
Now go ahead.
So for 250 years, I built a system. I trained you for what? For a time when I won't be there. But for all the things of imama and wilaya to happen, it happens within the system. I've trained you. You're not ready for it. I'm going to ghaibah. Yeah.
Obviously, the situation is not ideal, right? Like we mentioned with Sheikh Ali that the presence of the imam is very different from him not being there. I mean, the kind of barakat that comes, the guidance, you know, the fact that we can always reach to the reality when the imam is there because he's there to bounce off at the end of the day, right? Without him, where the chain ends, that person there, at the end of the day, his knowledge is limited. But when the imam is there, then you have access to everything.
So in other words, say it like this, basically. This system doesn't make us
needless of
the imam. Aslan wa abada is not like this. On the contrary, this system actually leads you to the imam. Right? What do we say? Remember the figure we had over there as well. It's like the veins in your body. Everything is connected. All the shias are connected together within the system. But where does it all merge towards? The heart, which is the imam. The qalb is the imam. Yeah. Right? These wukala, this system bring the people back towards the wali of Allah. The wilaya channels itself through the wali. Right? So the wali is where we want to get to. The system doesn't make you needless, right? But for the wali to work and for the people to get to the wali, you need the system. And the system is what we have today as well. It carries on. So this is what we want to talk about.
And one of the other differences is that in that time, the system was an underground system. But what we have today or across the years is that it's come out of sort of being an underground thing. It's
gone through up and down. There are some places and time in history where the system was underground, right? Some of the fuqaha couldn't express themselves, so at least in certain places, for example, they couldn't express the fact that they're a faqih, they're the scholar, they're representative of the imam. So you find across the history of 1,000 years or so that we've had of this system after during the Ghaibat al-Kubra, is that we had ups and downs. Sometimes it was underground, sometimes it wasn't underground, sometimes they achieved amazing success, right? Because the people were ready for at least a small level of seeing the system really being shining for history to see, for people to see. But sometimes, no, we had dark periods where the system really was struggling, we had a lot of difficulties. It's gone ups and downs, but the system has always prevailed, right?
So this concept has always been there, the concept that there has to be this person on top who has these characteristics, and he's the means through which people are being guided, people refer back to him for their questions, and he's also the one who's collecting the taxes and so on.
So let's look at this in more details, going back to So bringing back what we discussed so far and bring it together over here.
Okay.
Just before we take a pause and a break, I'd like to introduce a book that's recently published. So this book is in Farsi. For the English listeners, I apologize. Inshallah, maybe we can translate it one day. So this is a novel about the four Naib that we talked about. All four of them, their story in a novel form. Very beautiful book. You can find a lot of these stories that we talk about even more in this novel. Something that I've seen happen quite a few times now. A few books have come out recently where they've taken scholars as well as companions of the Ahlul Bayt and kind of shared their story and their history in novel form. So this is a very interesting book for those who can understand Farsi. It's about the four Naib and their story in a novel form.
What's the title?
It's called Char Fa'anus, the four lanterns.
Mm. Okay, brilliant. Thank you. Can we take a quick break and sure. then continue with this? So, brothers and sisters, before we move on to this, I think it's good we take a short break over here, get some refreshments, and then we'll start again in a few minutes.
السلام عليك يا حجة الله في أرض السلام عليك يا عين الله في خلق السلام عليك يهتدي به المهتدي ويفرج به عن السلام عليك
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum and welcome back to the session. We were discussing the Ghaybat al-Sughra and we finished discussing the Ghaybat al-Sughra and we went into the Ghaybat al-Kubra and discussed how this whole system of representatives that the Imams established from early days until the Ghaybat al-Sughra is a system that is meant to be continued, obviously with slight differences now that the Imam himself is not present. And a very, very important point that we mentioned and that needs to be remembered throughout, and Sheikh Ali also mentioned it and emphasized on it a lot in his session on reconciling the duty of the Imam with Ghaiba, and that is that the Imam not being there is not an ideal situation. We shouldn't be feel like, okay, now we're self-sufficient and we don't need the Imam at all because we have a system that's established, we have the ulama and so on. On the other side, though, we shouldn't feel like it's completely chaos and there's no point living because this, without an Imam, that's it, we cannot be guided and you know, life is over, basically. So there has to be a balance. We should understand that Imams have prepared us enough for us to be able to be guided during the Ghaiba time. But at the same time, this is not that ideal that will take society and to its peak and, you know, spread that ideal justice and guidance throughout the world the way Allah wanted it. And that will happen in the Zuhur time, inshallah. Okay, so let's continue our discussion with the Ghaiba.
So when we talked about the roles of the Imam, right? You can see on the slide, we mentioned this many times, and we said that the Wukala had roles that were there to bridge the role of the Imam, right? So in other words, the Imam's role were done through the system, right? One of the roles that is very important is preparing for the Ghaiba. In other words, the Imam established this organization, this network of wakala, in order for the people to be ready to deal with other than the Imam or to deal with the Imam indirectly, right? So people from Khorasan, Azerbaijan, Yemen, Egypt, Mada'en, etc., they are all now dealing with wakalas, they're dealing with individuals other than the Imam. And the Imam has set up this system, right? He has to set up the system and get people used to this. So for 200 years, people are now ready to be able to deal with other than Imam or indirectly with the Imam. Who are these individuals is very important, right? And how they need to deal with them is very important. So we find that the Imam does two very important things over here through this system. Through establishing the system, the Imam does two very important things. One is that he trains the wakala, and number two is that he trains the Shias. Right? So the system of wakala is what is this triangle where you have representatives of the Imam who are dealing with the Shias, right? The people. The Imam is on one side training the wakala and on the other side is training the Shias. So let's look at these two very quickly. When we say he's training the wakala, by setting up this system, right, he's telling the wakala that you have to learn about the religion because you're going to be teaching it. Mm. Right? He tells them how to do tarbiyah. He teaches the wakala how to collect khums, how to hold secrets, how to prepare for justice, how to establish a system which will be able to express and bring about the Sharia of Islam, which has justice within it.
So this system of wakala is really a sort of how can I call it, a preview of that government of justice that Imam Mahdi is going to establish, inshallah.
Or a way to prepare for it.
A way to prepare for it. Yeah, but it sort of indicates to that. Look, the basis by which people are chosen to lead this is not just because of fame or money or. Yeah. Because of popularity. No, there are certain criteria that allow them to take this position.
So the Imam teaches them. He tells them, go and give fatwa, right? Go and speak to people. Kallim, right? So it's Abdul Rahman ibn Hajjaj. Go and speak to the people. Do iftah. Go to different regions. He teaches, the Ahlul Bayt teach these wakala ijtihad. So how do you extract law from a hadith from the Quran? I'm not going to be here soon, no? Right, I want you to be able to do this. Mm. Let me teach you. So if you look at the hadith, it's very interesting. Right, the Imam doesn't tell, very often the Imam doesn't tell you what the law is. Right, he also tells you, okay, how do you extract it from here?
We find that in the early periods, though, the scholars never used to often used to just bring the hadith as it is rather than putting it in their own words. So how does that work?
The science progressed, right? But no, they were doing iftar as well, right? Even the scholars at that early period, right, they were coming up, bringing 2-3 hadiths together and saying the conclusion of these 2-3 hadiths is this point. They would have titles for the babs, for example.
Yeah, and I guess those titles of the babs or the fact that they selected certain hadiths and summarized all the many hadiths into those few was their type of ijtihad at that time, at very primary stage.
But even the title of the companions, the imam, the companions were doing ijtihad. And the imam would tell them, I want you to do ijtihad, right? I want you to be able to extract laws from the... I'll give you the principles, right? But you should be able to slowly learn because we're preparing for something. The imam would then teach them how to do tafsir. How to extract information from verse of the Quran, right? If you go back to these the hadith that related to tafsir, you realize that the imam is teaching the companion, okay, this is how you understand this verse, right? The imam is teaching them how to solve contradictions, right? Because I know there'll come a time where you won't be able to refer back to me and say, okay, which one's the right one, right? Because you know that during the time of the Ahlul Bayt, the companion will come to the imam and say, I've heard contradicting riwayat, can you tell me which one's the right one? And the imam will be like, okay, this is the right one. But sometimes you will say, okay, let me give you criteria and ways of how to solve this. Why? Because I won't be here soon.
There's that big difference between ghiba and when imam is there, right? That imam was accessible, but here now we have to use those criteria that imam has given
us. Yeah. The imam is then telling the wakala that I have to describe you what job is. He gives them a job description. What is an alim supposed to do? What is a wakil of the imam supposed to do? Right? He's supposed to teach. He's supposed to defend the religion. He's supposed to prepare for justice, for the establishment of a society that is led by individuals that are just, that individuals that are the highest level of knowledge and taqwa.
And that justice starts with an inner justice, right? It's something that you establish in yourself first so that you can establish it outside.
It's there to teaching the wakala to and the scholars to preserve secrets, right? How to implement the Sharia for with the political system that is required for this implementation of the Sharia. The Ahlul Bayt teach the wakala how to collect funds. First, he tells them you have the right to collect funds. How do you collect funds? Where do you distribute the funds? How do you spend it? How do you deal with it? Right? The wakala trained that, look, you guys are in charge of the Shias. The Shias look up to you. You are the role models. You are the guides. You are the ones who are protecting this religion. You are the Hujjah. Right? So you find that all of this, within across these 150 to 200 years, right, the imam is preparing this wakala. All for what? For them to be ready and prepared to take up this system forward when the ghaiba happens. Just to give a few examples. The imam had this letter to Ayyub ibn Nuh. We talked about this letter beforehand when there was a few things that were not going right. Step up and say, okay, make sure you deal like this and make sure you deal like this. And then it says, فَإِنَّكُمْ إِذَنْ تَحَيْتُمْ إِلَىٰ كُلِّ مَا أُمِرْتُمْ بِهِ. If you really do what I tell you to do, I've taught you so many things, right? I taught you how to be a wakil, how to be a scholar, right? How to be an alim. إِسْتَغْنَيْتُمْ بِذَلِكَ عَنْ مُعَاوَدَتِ. You will be needless of coming back to me all the time. Right? I'm teaching you to be alone. I'm teaching you how to walk. Basically, Ghaybat is coming, right? This is Imam Hadi, right? We've got two imams to go and the Ghaybat is there. You need to be prepare yourself in a way and follow the instructions. If you follow the instructions, the system is working in the best of ways. You find that the hadith is from Imam Hassan Askari, who reports back to from his forefathers to the Holy Prophet. أَشَدُّ مِنْ يُتْمِ الْيَتِيمِ أَلَّذِي إِنْقَطَعَ عَنْ أُمِّهِ وَأَبِيهِ يُتْمُ يَتِيمٍ إِنْقَطَعَ عَنْ إِمَامِهِ. Right? That worse and more difficult than an orphan who's lost his parents is an orphan who's lost his imam. Right? And that he doesn't have a way to go back to his imam and know the religion. Right? And therefore you have scholars who will come and really do what? Really play the role of the imam for the orphans. You know how when you have orphans, you have this in Sharia, right? When you have an orphan, and he doesn't have his dad, then another person comes and becomes in charge of this orphan to take care of him, right? Over here, the orphans are the Shias, because they don't have an imam to guide them, to teach them, to do their tarbiyah, to collect their khums. Who takes over?
The scholars.
The scholars. And the Ahl al-Bayt over here teaching us. He is training the wukala. Look, this is your role. Don't think because you've got a position, you become a scholar, you can do whatever you want. No, your role is this, is the Shias are important. We want the Shias to be taken care of. Al-Ihtijaj has brought a lot of these hadith. I'm quoting mainly from Tafsir of Imam Hassan al-Askari. I don't want to go into a Rijali discussion over here. The hadith are plenty, right? For example, from Musa ibn Ja'far, the seventh holy Imam, فَقِيْهٌ وَاحِدْ يُنْقِذُ يَتِيمًا مِنْ أَيْتَامِنَا الْمُنْقَتِئِينَ عَنَّا وَعَنْ مُشَاهَدَتِنَا بِالتَّعْلِيمِ مَا هُوَ مُحْتَاجٌ إِلَيْهِ أَشَدُّ عَلَىٰ إِبْلِيسِ مِنْ أَلْفِ عَابِدْ. One faqih, look at the word that's used for this faqih, one faqih who takes care of the orphans, in what sense? He teaches them, right? And gives them that which they need. This is more heavier for Iblis than 100 worshippers who don't do this. This is training the wakil, training the scholars. Look, these are your roles. You need to be teaching the Shias. Another thing that the wukala were taught was that your role is to step up when confusion happens. Remember the story of the waqf that happens. People come to Yunus ibn Abdul Rahman because now he's spreading the truth. He's saying, no, the imam has passed away. The seventh imam has been killed. Imam Ridha is now the imam. The people who did waqf, they come to Yunus and say, look, be quiet. I will give you loads of money. Right? He reports a hadith from Sadiqain, right? Imam Baqir, Imam Sadiq. Annahum qalu, they said, إِذَا ظَهَرَتِ الْبِدْعُ فَعَلَى الْعَالِمْ أَنْ يُظْهِرَ عِلْمَهُ. When bid'at happens, right? When the path of deen is going astray, who comes and solves the problem? The alim. Yes. This is me as a wakil, this is what I've been taught by my imam, that I have to step up. Within this system, the role of mine over here is to step up when things go wrong. When bid'ah happens, me as a scholar have to come and express my knowledge, have to show my knowledge.
The difference between this scholar and the other ones was that this one had taqwa and that he could control himself and not fall for the world, whereas the other ones fell for the world and the money and the power.
Yeah. فَإِنْ لَمْ يَفْعَلْ صُلِبَ نُورُ الْإِمَانِ. If somebody does, the alim doesn't do this, iman is taken away from his heart. This is in Kashi. I'm not going to narrate the hadith, but there's plenty of these things. For example, in Imam Hussein's sermon, this is a very powerful sermon, right? Where he's talking to the scholars in Arafah, at the Arafah Mina, right? Where he's talking to a scholar and he condemns the scholar, says, it's your guy's fault that we've come to a situation that we come right now with Yazid or with Muawiyah, right? The reason why this happens is because of you, you didn't do your job. Kind of telling that this is the role of a scholar. This is what we're supposed to be doing. Another very interesting thing, the imam is teaching the wakala of, I want you to write books. The imam was very much for, write down hadith, write down books. We find that in one of the very interesting stories where the person who's debating with other sects and spreading Islam, right? He says that I have a book with me in which I have gathered all the narrations of your father and I'm using this. The imam is very pleased with him, right? Over here, for example, we find that very interesting. أَنْفَذَ شَيْخُ الْحُسَيْنُ بْنُ الرُّوحِ عَنْهُ كِتَابَ التَّعْدِيبِ. There's a book that Hussein ibn Ruh, the third wakil, has written called Ta'dib. And he sends this book to إِلَى قُمْ. Sends this book to قُمْ. Right? وَكَتَبَ إِلَى جَمَاعَةِ الْفُقَهَا. And he writes to the fuqaha in قُمْ. Right? He's in Baghdad. He writes a letter to the قُمْ with his book. وقال, and sends the book as well. وَقَالَ لَهُمْ أُنْظُرُوا فِي هَذَا الْكِتَابِ وَانْظُرُوا فِيهِ شَيْءٌ يُخَالِفُكُمْ. So check this, right? I want you to check and see what's wrong with what you have. Let's compare our knowledge.
Why would the wakil, the direct naib of the imam, do this when he could have given it to
the imam himself? Exactly, the imam himself. Exactly, right? He doesn't go to the imam. This is the training period, right? Communication with knowledge has to happen. Dialogue between the scholars has to happen. This is the training progress, right? The imam is training people. Look, Hussein Nuru is sending a book, you guys check. And they reply to him and says, this part over here, we don't have this, you written something over here, etc., etc. This is in Ghibat Tusi. We find that this is a very interesting story as well. قَالَ كُنْتُ مَرِيضًا. The companion says that I was مَرِيض. فَدَخَلَ عَلَيَّ أَبُو جَعْفَر. Abu Ja'far over here is the ninth holy imam. And so the ninth holy imam comes to this companion, this wakil of him, Ya'uduni fi maradi. He's ill, he comes to visit him, like you visit an ill person. Says, فَإِذَا إِنْدَ رَأْسِ كِتَابُ يَوْمٍ وَلَيْلَةٍ. There's a book at my bedside table. The book is يَوْمٍ وَلَيْلَةٍ. That's what it's called. فَجَعَلَ يَتَصَفَّحُهُ وَرَقَةً وَرَقَةً. The imam picks up the book. He's come to visit his companion. He takes the book, he picks up the book. This is in Kashi. He picks up the book and starts reading the book. حتى أتى عليه من أوله إلى آخره. Until the imam has read from page one till the last page. Right? وجعل يقول رحم الله يونس بن عبد الرحمن. رحم الله يونس, رحم الله يونس, رحم الله يونس. This is a book that Yunus has written. The imam is happy with this. I want my scholars to be writing books. Right? I want them to be spreading the knowledge. I'm preparing you.
Do we have access to this book today?
Some of them are available, some of them are not available. Some of them, the latest scholars report from these books, basically. So the original is not with us, but we have parts of it from different
books later on. People like Khomeini, they compile those books. Exactly, they were from these.
The latest scholars would use these books, basically, to compile their own books. So you find that, and this is not the only book, by the way. Yeah, we have plenty of books from the Ashab. Right? The Imams would encourage Ashab to write books. Right? The Wukala, the high-level wukalas, they all had written books. When it comes to khums, right? Many times the Shia would come to the imam to pay khums, and the imam would tell them what? Go and pay your khums to this wakil or that wakil. Don't come to me. The imam is preparing the wakil and the people that you need to go in. This is how the system needs to work. Right? Then you need to go to the scholar and get your receipt for paying the khums with that. So this was about training the wakala. Now we come to the imam's second thing that he does with the system is to train the Shias. How does he train the Shias? First, he trains the Shias by telling them that there's a system in place, use the system. Exactly what I just mentioned over here. The Shias need to use the system. Don't come to me. I want you to get used to using an intermediary, using a person who will be your link towards me. Many a time, time and time again, people will come to the imam will be referring them back to the wakil. Say, go to the wakil, go to the wakil. Right? When it comes to your questions, when it comes to your queries, aqaid queries, ahkam queries, when it comes to giving your khums and your different wujuhat, use the wakil. Why? They are hujjat. And the imam would tell the people, look, what they say is from me. Why? Because I want you to get trained. I want you to get used to the situation that sometimes I won't be there. Whatever they say, take it from them. That which they say is hujjat for you. They are. And then the Ahl Bayt would then really show the value of a scholar in the eyes of the people. They are the Warathatul Anbiya. They speak, what they speak, there's light in what they speak. Their hearts are filled with taqwa, right? They get ilham. When you have fights between yourselves, don't go to ta'ud, go to the scholars, solve your issues with the scholars, etc., etc. So you find that this is how the Ahlul Bayt now teaches the people about this. Just to give you a few examples. Companions come to the imam and says, I'm in Qum, who do I get my information from? Who I get my religion from? They say, go to Zakariya ibn Adam. Elsewhere you find, again in Kashi, they come to Imam Ridha alayhi salam. In fact, this is the wakil that comes to Ridha. Sa'altu Ridha alayhi salam, faqultu inni la alqaka fi kulli waqt. I don't see you in every time. Right? For me, you're in ghibah. I don't see you. I don't have access to you. Fa'an man akhudhu ma'alima dini, so who shall I learn my religion from? Qala khudh min Yunus al-Abdul Rahman. Imam is teaching the people. I'm training you guys. When you don't have access to me, refer to the scholars. Take from them. Sometimes over here, for example, the imam gives names. Sometimes the imam doesn't give names. It's just general criteria. You yourself fit names. Just like over here right now. It's up to us to fit names into the criteria that we have. By the way, this is what we call, if you've heard this term, that you have Naib-e-Khas and Naib-e-Am. Right? Naib-e Khas means the Imam has appointed the name. Naib-e Am is
specified someone.
Basically. Specified. Naib-e Am is someone who the Imam has given a criteria. You just fit in the name in the criteria. Right? So the Maraji today and the scholars that have come of over the last millennium or so, okay, they have been the wakala and the naib of the Imam. But Naib-e Am. None of them can claim that, oh, I went to the Imam and the Imam told me that I'm naib. None of them. That's not allowed. That's not the system in Ghaibat al-Kubra. The system in Ghaibat al-Kubra is that you fit a particular criteria. If you fit the criteria, then you're...
Then you understand that this person, Imam is happy with this person representing his teachings, basically.
And you're the puzzle, you're the piece in that puzzle of the whole system of wakala. So, for example, in a hadith where the Imam says that, Ya akhi, inna Allah azza wa jal ja'ala fi kulli min ar-rusul baqaya min ahli al-ilm yad'una man dhalla ila al-huda. Right? After every prophet come people who will guide, will remove people from misguidance. Right? This is a general principle that the Imam is giving. Or for example, in another hadith mentioned both in Kamaluddin as well as in by Sheikh Tusi. So Sheikh Saduq and Sheikh Tusi both have mentioned this hadith where a person writes a letter to the 12th Wali Imam where the 12th Imam replies each and every one of his queries. Right? وَأَمَّا مَا سَأَلْتَ وَأَمَّا مَا سَأَلْتَ until it comes to this. وَأَمَّا الْحَوَادِثُ الْوَاقِيَةِ however, regarding the things that the new events that happen, right? The challenges that the Ummah is facing today, right? Who do you have to go to? That was your question. فَارَجِعُوا فِيهَا إِلَى رُوَاتِ حَدِيثِنَا refer to those who narrate our hadith, right? فَإِنَّهُمْ حُجَّتِي عَلَيْكُمْ وَأَنَا حُجَّةُ اللَّهِ عَلَيْهِمْ because they are the hujjah of my hujjah, just I am the hujjah of Allah.
In here, yeah. Ruwat, just to report, is not itself. It obviously doesn't make sense, right?
Obviously.
Yeah, you have to understand. You have to be that person who understands these hadith, know which hadith is appropriate in what situation.
And we have plenty of different hadith where the Imam have used this term of ruwat, right? Those who narrate the hadith, to explain that this doing riwayah of hadith, not just sitting around here, that my five-year-old is also a ruwat of hadith otherwise.
So we need to be careful about terminology. Sometimes they change across time, right? So right now when we say this is a rawi, we just mean somebody who is in chain of narration. When the imams were using these terms, there's a different meaning, a much bigger meaning and a deeper than what
we said. From the famous hadith of I'rif manazil al-shi'atina, right? Know the status of our shias. Over here, the shias are those special scholars. By how? By how much they narrate hadith. Obviously, you don't talk about narrating hadith because you don't want the manzil of the scholars. How much they have understood the hadith, how much they work on this hadith. And Hasan al-Thalith, we find that he writes in As'aluhu amman akhudhu ma'ali min dini, right? The companion asks him, who do I get my knowledge from of the religion? Wa kataba akhuhu aydan, and his brother writes the same question to the Imam. Right? Two brothers write one letter or two letters but with the same content to the Imam. He says, Fahimtu ma dhakartum, I understood what you're asking me. Fasmida fi dinikuma ala musinni fi hubbina. Refer to somebody who has this love of ours in his heart, who has kind of grown over the years, right? And his heart is filled with our love. Wa kulli kabirin taqaddumi fi amrina. Right? فَإِنَّهُمْ كَافُوكُمَا إِنْشَاءَاللَّهِ they will be sufficient for you. Basically, the Imam over here is giving general traits. I don't want to discuss these traits because that's another discussion. I just want to show that the Imam is preparing the people that you need to... I'm giving you general criteria. Before I would tell you, go to Yunus ibn Abdul Rahman. Go to Zakir ibn Adam. Over here, I'm giving you general criteria. In Al-Kafi from Abi Ja'far, again, quoting the Holy Prophet, really emphasizing this general principles that I want to give. لا تصلح الإمام إلا لرجل في ثلاث. This imama won't come to a person unless he has three characteristics, right? He has this wara, he has this hilm, right? And he's like a loving father for the people, right? This imam is general term over here, right? Also refers to those who will carry on this message of imama. Another way that the Ahlul Bayt will put a lot of emphasis on and really prepare the people, right? Over here we talk about preparing the people, is that they will give them criteria and tell them, look, be careful, right? Of two things. One is that not every one of these wakala will take you to me. You'll find across history, time and time again, even today, scholars who abuse the system, scholars who are misguided, who wear the attire of the garment of scholarship, but they're empty of knowledge or empty of taqwa. Or sometimes they have knowledge and taqwa, but they're empty of bravery. Sometimes they have bravery, but they're empty of ability to manage and establish a just society, right? Empty of courage, they're fearful scholars, right? All of these things the Ahl al-Bayt have taught the people. Look, these are the people that I want, the wakala that you want to follow, the scholars that you take for your knowledge, for these roles that the Imam has, at these kind of criteria are very important, right? And also never forget,
it's not knowledge on its own. There's other things that has to come with the knowledge. Otherwise, that knowledge is not sufficient. Yeah.
So we mentioned, right, trustworthiness is very important. We mentioned secretive and taqiyah is very important. We talked about courage and bravery is very important. These things are criteria that alim ibn zamani, right? He knows the times. He's aware. He's got the awareness of the society.
Yeah, that insight.
That insight. Very important. And another thing that the Imams would very carefully and very cautious to remind the people is that, remember, you're not becoming independent. These scholars should never tell you things about from themselves. They are my wakil. They are my representative. That means what they say, they have to come from me. The moment you find scholars that talk from themselves, put them aside. They don't fit the criteria. They're not part of the system, right? For example, in this letter from the Imam, which is reported by Sheikh Tusi, the Imam says, فَقَالَ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامُ خُذُوا بِمَا رَأَوْا وَذَرُوا مَا رَأَوْا. Basically, let me mention the whole story so it becomes clear. Basically, what happens is that there's a book out there right now, okay, which has a lot of bad things in it. Right, a lot of bad things. So they come to Hussein ibn Ruh and say, like, what do we do with this? It's a book that's been published as well, it's spread. So he says, do exactly what the Imam Abu Muhammad, so the Hassan Askari, did with the book of Bani Faddal. Right? The book of Bani Faddal was also the same thing, and it had reached everybody's houses. And the Imam gave a criteria, a general criteria. It's very beautiful, right? Didn't condemn the book, or didn't say, let me give you a criteria. A criteria that you have to apply at that time up until the dhuhr of the 12th Imam, right? What is this criteria? Take that which they narrate from us, basically, okay? And don't take that which is from themselves.
So their own opinions in this matter, you put it on the side.
Exactly.
We use, what's important is what Imam has said, basically.
Exactly. In other words, it's saying that, look, the scholar is my representative. He should tell you what I want. He should tell you about the religion that has come from us, the Ahlul Bayt and the Holy Quran.
That's right? Why it's really important for the scholars to study properly and to make sure that what they're saying is representing what the Imam would say, not something that comes from their own
pocket. Exactly. So we don't want scholars to be saying their own opinions. We don't want scholars to be coming things from their own pockets. No. The scholars have to say what the Ahlul Bayt are saying. That's what they're wakil, their representatives. The Imam then will really bring these scholars up and say, look, these scholars are very special. In Kashi, very important hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, اِعْرِفُوا مَنَازِلَ شِيَعَتِنَا بِقَدْرِ مَا يُحْسِنُونَ مِنْ رِوَايَاتِهِمْ عَنَّا. You know the value of our Shias, our scholars, basically, right? By how beautifully they narrate the hadith, how much understanding they have the hadith. فَإِنَّا لَا نَعُدُّ الْفَقِيْهِ مِنْهُمْ فَقِيْهًا حَتَّى يَكُونَ Muhaddathan. A faqih is not counted as a faqih in our eyes until it becomes a muhaddath. And faqida, what do you mean? Remember what muhaddath means? Muhaddath means that he's in contact with the angels. Qala yakunu mufahhaman wal mufahhamu muhaddath. That this faqih actually is taught. He gets ilham. Tafhim is done to him.
This is what we mean by muhaddath. To understand, basically. Exactly. Yeah. And this is what it means, that the angels are sort of making him understand.
Basically, he's trying to say that the true scholars out there, right, they'll be inspired. They'll get this ilham.
That connection with Allah is not cut. If a person strives hard, seeks knowledge, and has taqwa and all the other characteristics,
exactly,
then Allah himself will guide him through a
exactly.
different way.
And we have plenty of hadith. This is like plenty of hadith to show
even
this.
Even in the Quran we have, right? Have taqwa, ittaqillah, yu'allimukum Allah. So have taqwa and Allah will teach you.
What better? But see how again the Ahlul Bayt are teaching the people. Here's my criteria, right? This is what I want you to remember always. These are the fuqaha. These are the fuqaha that take this position in this system that I want you to work with them. And lastly, And we end over here, inshallah, is the famous hadith of Umar ibn Hanzala, where he comes to the Imam and says, he's a scholar, like he wants to, let's discuss how we're going to do things. He says, like, an rajulain min ashabina baynahuma munaza'a fi daynin aw mirathin fatahakama ila sultan wa ila al-qudat ayahillu lahu dhalik. There's two individuals from amongst our Shias. They have a fight between themselves, right? Regarding money, regarding earth, whatever it is. They have a fight between themselves. Are they allowed to go to the hakim? Are they allowed to refer to a court of justice where the laws that are implemented are man-made laws? Are they allowed to do that? The Imam says, no. It's okay, what do we do now? You're not there. We haven't been able to establish the just government yet. What do? The Imam says, then go to the wakils. Go to the fuqaha. يَنْظُرَانِ إِلَى مَنْ كَانَ مِنْكُمْ مِمَّنْ قَدْ رَوَى حَدِيثَنَا. Those who report our hadith. وَنَذَرَ فِي حَلَالِنَا وَحَرَامِنَا. Those who know our halal and our haram. وَعَرَفَ أَحْكَامَنَا فَلْيَرْضَوْ بِهِ حَكَمًا فَإِنِّي قَدْ جَعَلْتُهُ عَلَيْكُمْ حَاكِمًا. Be happy with them being the judge, them being establishing the laws, right? Because I'm happy with that. Now obviously the faqih can't establish laws just like that, right? There's a whole system that needs to be placed. This is why we have a system whereby at the top of the system you have a scholar, right? A system that is based on laws that are just laws that come from the Sharia, right?
And naturally, to be able to establish laws that come from the Sharia, you have to have knowledge of those laws, exactly. Which is really important, which is something we forget. We feel like, you know, somebody can be leading Islamic society but not have the necessary, not have knowledge of Islam.
No.
Well, then that leadership is not an Islamic leadership.
Exactly. That leadership that the system wukala was set up for, to prepare for the zuhur, right? And to establish that society, has to have at the top a scholar, a faqih. Not just a scholar who has knowledge of the religion, but also has taqwa as well. Also one who we can rely on. But more than that as well, who can hold on secrets, who is able to manage. Remember how we said that one of the traits of the wukala is to be able to manage, right? Mm. To be able to have the bravery and the courage and the awareness and the basira of the time, right? All these things, to be able to be at the top of a system whereby you're leading a society based on the Quran and the Hadith. This is what the Ahlul Bayt basically are preparing during their times. So, to bring it all together now and end the session, is that you realize that during these 150 to 200 years or so, the Imam have set up a system, a network of wakala, right? One of the fundamental things and the reasons why they set up this place was to prepare for the ghibah, was to prepare us.
But also generally, because that's how it works, right?
Exactly.
This is how Imams carry it out, and they expect us to learn from this and get inspiration, or even gain lessons from how Imams want things to happen.
Exactly. And so they did these two things. They were preparing the wakala and giving them the right tools and knowledge and skills to be able to be the kind of scholars that really have to work within the system. And at the same time, they were training the people that you'll be working within the system in terms of your ma'alim dinik, in terms of your religion, your tarbiyah, your khums, your political and social issues and setup. The hujjah that you require, etc., it all comes from within the system of the scholars. So basically, this network and this organization never faded away.
Mm.
It had ups and downs, right? But it has always been there. The Ahlul Bayt wanted to be there. Mm. It had a few changes. The wakil wasn't appointed anymore by name. He was appointed by criteria.
And again, even the terms and the terminologies have changed, right?
Yeah.
Before, we used to call them wakil and ruwat, and slowly these terminologies changed. They started to be called, for example, fuqaha, for example, mujtahid, and this continued until what we have today. So terminologies have changed, the methodology has improved, the extent of the knowledge has improved a lot, the sciences have developed, and they've been based on what the previous scholars have been doing. But that chain continues, the essence continues, and basically we can say that what we have today is nothing but a direct continuation of what started when the Imams was present.
And so now, right now, we're sitting in 2022, right? And you have a system in place, a system run by fuqaha, by maraja, and the Shias benefit from it. You might not realize, right? You might reject it. People did that throughout the centuries, or even the time of the imam, right? They were not willing to pay homes, not willing to learn from the wakil, okay? But within all that, right, the system is in place. It's working perfectly fine. You can even say that today is as strong as it has been over the past millennium, right? If you were to take a course on the history of scholarship from the time of beginning of Ghaybat al-Kubra till today, you find that what we're seeing right now, right, with all the things that we see around us, there hasn't been a time where the system was the stronger as it is right now. And we're sitting in the sign and we're blessed to be here and witnessing these things.
Yeah, very much established. And a system that's established, that's really expanded a lot. And alhamdulillah, the relative freedom that we have now compared to the previous years is much more so.
Inshallah, so this is where I want to stop over here, because it's a very perhaps heavy point to think about and we need to really reflect upon it. Tomorrow, inshallah, we'll be talking about the Hawza and linking it together and seeing how at our doorstep we have this system called the Hawza.
So what's going on in the Hawza? What's the Hawza all about? What are we studying? What are the different subjects? And you know, what's going on behind the scenes sort of the Hawza.
Exactly. And how the Hawza is part of the system.
Yeah. It will be very interesting for the brothers and sisters to once also learn about how these sciences also developed throughout the years. We have very big scholars that have been passing on this knowledge from Sheikh Kulaini onwards, you know, Sheikh Tusi coming, and then, you know, across the centuries, how things have developed, the ups and downs. These are things that are really interesting, that give good insight into how this knowledge has progressed. But I guess it's good that we've sort of fast forward, come to today and discuss where we are today. Okay, so brothers and sisters, inshallah, we'll have our last session, inshallah, in the next session, and we'll be discussing the present situation, this idea of the scholars and the Hawza, which is the place of training the scholars, the sort of the academic institution for Islamic studies, which is something that was set up at that time of the Imams. That spirit and this concept was there, and today we have the same spirit and the same concept. Obviously, in the modern world, this is modernized. It looks, you know, something new, and when we look at what we have today, it doesn't take us back to that time. But when we look at the elements and the structure and the concept, we find that it's exactly what our Imams have taught us. So inshallah, we'll look into this in more detail tomorrow, and we'll have inshallah both Sheikh Kazim and Sheikh Mikdad to discuss and to have more insight about what Hawza study is about, what Islamic studies is all about, and inshallah get more better understanding. So until tomorrow, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.